Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Yeah, the satellite panel is brought to you this afternoon with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. We are joined by three men who I believe, having crunched the numbers in the build-up, have played in 16 All-Ireland hurling finals. Anthony Cunningham, former Galway player and Galway manager and current Dublin selector. Stephen Lucy, who played in the 2007 final for Limerick. And of course, Kilkenny's Richie Hogan. Lads, you're all very welcome. Three people, well, certainly from Anthony's point of view and yours, Richie. I know, Stephen, you're out of the senior hurling scene a little while, but you'd much rather be preparing for tomorrow instead of sitting here with me. Anthony, you'd like to be on the line alongside Pat Gilroy tomorrow afternoon.
Definitely, you can't be playing, first of all. I suppose if we had our lives back again or years back again, you'd want to be playing, really. That's where most enjoyment is. And but being a coach or being a manager or being involved, yeah, that's super as well. Like, it's sport and it's your love, like, since you were a kid. So that's why you know Croke Park is the sanctuary, really, and where you want to play. Used to be the first Sunday in September. Now it's August, the last Sunday of Championship.
Yeah,
and it's just a brilliant place to be.
And Richie, you'd love to be playing. From your point of view, when you've battled with that back injury for so long, you get yourself fit, sharp. You look pretty much back to your best in that second half against Limerick, and just as your body is thinking, right, now we're raring to go for Championship, Kilkenny are no longer part of it, and you have to watch it from the sidelines tomorrow as well. That's pretty frustrating, I would have thought, particularly given what happened last year as well.
Yeah, of course. I suppose we were probably used to being involved, certainly in the latter stages, whether it be semi-finals or finals, and obviously I had a long, hard kind of year / 18 months of trying to get back fit, and I was just coming back, felt as if I was moving better and that bit sharper, and certainly was able to play a couple of games in a row. And it's disappointing that we didn't go a little bit further and that we're not involved tomorrow. And you know, it'll be a fantastic occasion to be a part of.
Certainly the way you swiveled on that ball for that goal against Limerick told me the lower back is functioning as you would wish it to be.
You've played
a few club games in the meantime, so you're back in the mix of it now.
Yeah, we've played a few club games. We're not going too bad. Serious stuff will start now in 2 or 3 weeks. So, look, delighted to be getting some sort of match fitness back in, because with the way the Championship went this year, obviously it was a new system. There wasn't a huge amount of hurling going on in between, in terms of training sessions. There wasn't a huge amount going on in between games. And then, you know, because I probably wasn't fit enough to last the 70 minutes for the first couple of games, you know, you're fighting for a couple of minutes here and a couple of minutes there, and then eventually getting in near the end. So, you know, I've played a couple of games since. I'll have 3 or 4 more games down the line, and you know, I think that'll help me get back to somewhere near where I was a couple of years ago.
Yes, fans, Anthony, were really just delighted with how the hurling championship has gone this year. For me anyway, it's the best hurling championship in my memory. But the one group of people it doesn't suit are the players from 16 to 30 in a county panel. Because as Richie's just so perfectly outlined, these A versus B games, they're probably soon going to become a thing of a past, certainly in the midst of the round robin series. And if you're close to getting to turning 15, you're just not getting a chance to show the management what you can do in training, whereas you would have in the past had 2 weeks and would have been able to go hell for leather in one training match. So as Richie said, you have to kind of show them in a 10, 12, 18 minute spell at the end of a game that you should be starting. It's a bit of a nightmare for those lads.
Yeah, Sunday after Sunday, it's impossible, as you've said, like to really, really see new players or play a strong A versus B match midweek. You wouldn't do that. But that's why I suppose it's important latter stages of the league that, you know, you see as many as you can of your panel. I think most inter-county setups will use the league for that for the next couple of years, and maybe the relevance of the league could come down a bit.
But if you're injured for the league, as Richie was,
For the start of the championship,
really screwed.
You'll find it very, very hard to get in. I'd say they probably will look at it, maybe play 2 Sundays in a row, and hopefully everybody would get 2 weeks of a break then, and that would allow a bit more of the panellists to play in between. I think 3 Sundays running is very, very difficult, and I think they'll reschedule. But there's also a big plus as well for fans and, you know, for everybody to play Sunday after Sunday if you can avoid injuries.
Yeah, it's been brilliant for us.
I mean, it sort of rolled from Sunday to Sunday right through. There was Munster games, Leinster games, and huge talking points right through the summer. And it's a small bit more condensed. The one guys that probably suffer most are the clubs, really. And a lot of clubs are struggling now, and guys had switched off for the summer, so it's that side of it is difficult, but and it needs to be looked at, really.
Yeah, it's been a summer for the hurling snobs, because they have had it lorded over the fans of the larger ball game pretty much from the opening weeks of the summer. I would say it's been par for the course Galway in the build-up to this final, because they've been there so many times from 2012, 2015, last year and this year. I'd imagine the last 3 weeks, Stephen, in Limerick have been pretty quiet, have they?
Oh yeah, sure there isn't. You wouldn't even know.
They don't do hype in Limerick, do they?
No, they don't at all. No, I think that it's been managed fairly well from the team and the squad's point of view. What Shane Dowling said in the interview immediately after the match was telling. It kind of set the tone for everybody, and I think, well, maybe this week I think people are getting very excited, but I think the players have been sheltered from it.
John Kiley was reading off a very similar page, like minutes after the full-time whistle. So what is it about Limerick people that...
I think Limerick people are just stone mad for sport. It could be soccer as well, like, you know, when Limerick FC get going, the rugby obviously as well, and through with the hurling. Like, there's so many Limerick hurling supporters that are just desperate, and I mean crying out for some bit of success, so that when we do get some bit of momentum, then it just takes on a life of its own, and it's plain to see then. Like, I was driving around Limerick and there was a guy selling flags on one place, and then I went the next day and he was down selling them somewhere else, and there was someone in Croom and there was someone in Brough. There's just flags and bunting just up everywhere. It's great to see. It's great for the kids driving around as well. There's kids out playing hurling that you'd never see playing hurling, and the RGA pitch at home in Croom has been very busy with kids, so that's great to see, you know.
Jackie Tyrrell was writing yesterday, and he said there was an old line that Brian Cody used to throw out, Richie, that you can't win an All-Ireland in the week before the game, but you can lose one. If you don't get your preparation right, if you don't handle the hype and the mental side of it right. Do you remember in 07, Stephen, that did you guys get things wrong? I know you weren't expected to be there, and you were up against a Kilkenny team at the peak of its powers, so... Maybe in some ways being there was a brilliant achievement in itself, but when you look back now, like, you needed to take that chance, because there hasn't been another one for 11 years, and there wasn't one until 11 years prior to that, back in 96. So do you remember the week and things that you guys got wrong that week?
Yeah, the 3 weeks leading up to it, like, I mean, the manner in which we beat Waterford, like, there was celebrations going on there, like, as if we'd won the All-Ireland. Now, that was great for supporters, but, and we had, you know, we celebrated getting to the final, but when it came down to it then, there was distractions there that we shouldn't have had. And I believe that this current setup have learned from that, you know, not letting it get to them, not having everybody ringing the players, media, supporters and friends. I think somebody else, in fact, is looking after their tickets, which is very clever. I mean, I remember I ended up with 52 tickets and I was trying to distribute those, and I wanted to get rid of them.
At what stage in the 3 weeks window are we talking here, where you were going around with a bag full of tickets?
Well, like, I was giving out to family. They went early, but there was the last few that I was trying to get rid of, like, the weekend before the match. Like, but I just wanted rid of them. But people couldn't come to me because wherever they were working, I had to go to them. But I just
so you're driving around the county with tickets, like the
like a week before, but it was only a small few. But I just wanted rid of them, you know. But
that doesn't happen anymore, Richie, does it?
I don't think there's any of that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, tickets are. I always said tickets are a nightmare. I got to a stage at one stage where I started off, myself and my brother came onto the panel at the same time, and Paddy was on for maybe three or four of those All-Irelands, so we had double the amount of tickets. And then when Paddy was no longer involved in the panel a couple of years later, we had the same amount of people coming looking for tickets, but now I only have half the allocation. And even, like, I tried to let my parents look after it for a while, but then, you know, people find it very easy to ask my parents for tickets, and and then it becomes a nightmare even placing people together, because you're just given the tickets, and one fellow wants three together, one fellow wants four together, one fellow, and what makes it even worse sometimes is you get the people who you really should be giving tickets to, your close friends and family. Mm. they don't want to ask you, and you know they need one, and you know they're going scrounging looking for them somewhere else because they don't want to bother you. So I used to always just get as many as I possibly could, and I'd always, like a few people on my staff when I was in school, a few brilliant GA hurling supporters, I used to just get the tickets and give them to them even though they didn't ask me, because I knew that they'd be going looking for them somewhere else. But as long as you can get that stuff out of the way early, obviously I was well used to it, but as a new player coming in, it can be a little bit of a distraction. All right.
So you were on the bench for that 2000. You were certainly on the panel in the 2007 final. I know you didn't play. I think 2009 was the first time you won an All Ireland on the field to play. So your experience of that was probably a bit different to Stephen's. You knew you'd be starting, whereas you were probably there just along for the experience to kind of soak it in and see how these guys did things. So do you remember what the ticket situation was back in 2007? And was it an easy enough ride for you that time?
Well, yeah. I was blessed in the sense that I wasn't on the panel for the semi-final. So I had been training with Kilkenny all year. And that's what they used to do in the past. They'd bring some of the newer guys straight out of minor. They'd bring them in, they'd let them train. And I was involved, let's say, from February onwards. But I was going to the matches as a supporter. Like I paid into the All-Ireland semi-final, I think it was against Wexford. And I paid into that match to go and watch it. And then Brian gave me a ring, I think, about a week before the Limerick All-Ireland. I'd been playing and training, and I had been going so well that you know, he had no choice but to put me on the panel. So and Brian is very fair like that, and he's done it since as well. So I literally had loads of tickets because nobody knew I was on the panel, so nobody was asking me for any, and I was getting measured up for, you know, I had to. Luckily, my aunt worked in the shop where the suits were being handed out, and everyone else had been sorted, and I had to go in last minute and get all this sort of stuff. So it was kind of just it was a bit surreal for me in that sense, because I wasn't really preparing for an All-Ireland in like I would have a couple of years later when I was involved for the full year. So in that sense, it was great. It was just brilliant to be involved, to be honest with you. I knew I wasn't going to be starting. I knew I wasn't going to be used unless we were in serious trouble. So I was able to kind of enjoy it and soak it in. And I was saying to Stephen earlier on, I've never seen anything like, and I've been involved in a fair few since, but I've never seen anything like the atmosphere at that game. Now, maybe it's just because it was my first, and it maybe affects you a little bit more, but I've never heard anything like the noise when the teams were on the pitch. You couldn't speak to a fella a couple of yards away. You couldn't do anything. It was incredible. I've never seen anything like that in all the All-Ireland since. And obviously they've all been full houses, but I've never come across.
And was that the Limerick factor, Stephen?
The wall of sound. The
Brian
noise
Geary said,
out, yeah. It went on and on.
I was talking to a couple of the groundsmen up there since. We've been up for a few work things in Croke Park, and they actually did mention the cheer that the team got that day. It did unsettle us. I know it did for myself a small bit. Yeah. And that's someone like Brian Geary, who you think is this unflappable character that will be able to take on any occasion. Do you remember it like that?
I remember it almost hit you. Like even I felt that there was a wall of heat kind of hit you. Maybe it was cooler in the dressing rooms, but the heat and the noise, I remember thinking, wow, this is fantastic. But then we just said, right, can't knuckle down now, we can go out and do the warm-up. The only thing I remember was as well was that before a final, there's more faffing around. There's a terrible amount of faffing around, and there's a huge number of people on the pitch who aren't normally on the pitch.
So you're talking like the 60 minutes before throwing?
Yeah, well, no, just even the half an hour before the ball is thrown in from when you run onto the pitch. Like there's a band, there's a carpet, there's more people around.
I was a drum,
like I remember watching a final there a few years ago, and did they have a hawk was meant to bring down the whistle. And I'd say they must have practiced it in the weeks leading up to it, but they didn't have 80,000 people there, so the hawk wouldn't come down.
He wouldn't land.
We were all above the stand saying, this one is going to take off with the whistle, he won't come down at all. So stuff like that can be a real distraction.
So the referee's whistle was in the claws of a hawk.
Yeah, not for our final, but for another final a few years later. Like I was like, who in Croke Park thought this was a good idea? Like,
he's frightened to finish. He was frightened because of the crowd. He goes off the other direction.
To get back to that kind of stuff would throw you at it, because there's a little bit of hanging around too, and you're just like, come on, let's get going.
They shorten the time for warm-ups. When you get to the final, it was so ludicrous. One year they sent out the agenda beforehand during the week, and something like 12 minutes is it, because they want to have all this other.
And then there's people in the way of your warm up as well. Yeah, so you can't lay out where you want to go because of people.
I think it's
way.
17 minutes now, something like that. So
how unsettling is that, Anthony? Then Even if you've been given it as a management team. So I obviously want to talk about what it was like preparing for these finals of the 80s and early 90s as a player, but you're there as a manager in 2012 and 2015. When you're given this agenda and you're clearly thinking, well, that we have X amount of time normally for our warm-up, and it's also precise military-wise, it's that we know exactly where we need to be and when, and then now they've taken 10, 12 minutes, shaved it off.
So. I think it's back up to 70 now, but it is, you know, the time that you arrive in Croke Park, when you go to, and you post that, you go through that with the players, you post an example of or what they send out, the agenda for the day, the time you're out, what time the national anthem is, what time the parade is, so you go through that, so it's just 17 minutes, and
you warm up, there's an indoor warm up.
You warm up inside, and you just have practice. Your warm up really. So that's it's clockwork for that. But getting out there, getting in there, you know, all the times. But you get used to it, and that's a big plus as well. I think to Galway, they've been there for quite a few finals now, and that's a plus. But I still think they're so organised now. The teams, I think now.
I don't think it won't faze them,
yeah. And this current Limerick team, for example, played in a lot of Fitzgibbon finals, minor finals. They've been there in All-Ireland final day, most of these players, under 21 finals. And look at all the matches you have this year. So there's routine in every match this
Even
year.
Even the semi-final, I watched them, I was watching their warm-up closely, and it was just one blow of the whistle. They knew what was coming next, because you can't hear, or you won't hear shouts from the coach, from Paul Kinnock or Joe or whoever it is, but just one blow of the whistle and they'll know. They'll just look over and they'll see and they just go through. It was like clockwork.
We've heard of managers before who are taking sides into an All-Ireland final for the first time. So that doesn't apply to Galway this time around, obviously, but it does apply to this Limerick team, everyone on the panel, bar Seamus Hickey. It's a new experience for them that, you know, they will stop in training. We saw it in the documentary that was made for the Dublin Ladies Footballers last year, where they'll actually play out our rendezvous on a training match one night, A versus B's. They'll try and go through the routine to the minute as to how it's going to be an All-Ireland final day. Is that still done? Is that something that this John Kiely would have considered? Or is it not necessary given these guys have played in finals at Fitzgibbon at 21 minor?
I'm not sure. I don't know is the answer. They may have done, but I think it, these guys have maturity beyond their years. They really have, and they're so level-headed. And they've played in so many big games. They've been to two minor All-Ireland finals. Mm. They've won two under-21 All-Irelands.
But you guys thought you were ready in 07, and you guys had players in your team that had won back-to-back All-Ireland under-21 medals. In the years previous to that, and yet you're 2-2 to no score down in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, I think Kilkenny had their homework done and they targeted a weakness and they went for it. Like, just maybe Seamus is just inexperienced that day. I wouldn't call it a weakness, but they just targeted the younger, inexperienced player. They got through and they got the goals. They got the head start, and I don't know, did we win the rest of the game by a point? But like, that's a moot point. Mm. It doesn't matter. Like, the damage
felt
was done.
Over. Yeah, I remember at that game, it did feel over.
You know, like, so there they did. They got the fast start and that kind of won the game in the end.
I think you could physically see and visibly see that day. They drained. Mm-hmm. I mean, their energy had gone after that start. After 10 minutes, you could see, gee, these lads are just, they'd lost all confidence. Mm.
Yeah, we never gave up though. We kept going and we got it close enough, but we never got, I don't know how, we didn't really threaten.
But it is awful disappointing when that happens. It's your whole year goes up in smoke and in a few minutes. At least if you're in a match for three quarters of the match, or you have a good first half, or you know.
And the fact that it came so quickly, it was like bang, bang, as opposed, like, Clare went down, I don't know, what did they go down, 1-9, they were down like 7 points, but that was more over like 20 minutes, so it was slower. Yeah. It wasn't as much of a hammer.
It wasn't true goals are
so killer, it was point after point, but bang, bang, goals, like, you know,
it's a killer.
Yeah, well.
I think Johnny Glenn will probably have that in his head there tomorrow as well, because Kilkenny of old really were cutthroat, really, and they went for the juggler. And if they, as you said, thought there was a weakness there, they'd go for gold. I mean, when these guys are at the top of their game, like, bang, and, you know, they beat you in 2 minutes. That's how.
I think it's different. It's different now in the sense that it's easier to score now. Mm. Teams are getting nearly 30 points in every game. So if you do go down 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 points, it's actually, there isn't a huge sense of panic. Like, even I'm not even sure of how we went a good few scores ahead of you guys this year down in Thurles after maybe 20 minutes. I think we were maybe 4 or 5 points ahead, and you know, you'd be kind of thinking, even at club level, you'd be kind of thinking, God, we're under pressure here now. But, you know, within 5-10 minutes, Limerick had gone a point ahead, and that's the way it kind of works now. Yeah. There's all of the players are able to score pretty quickly. Yeah. So
the rate of scoring has really gone through the roof. It has. One thing live playing Galway this year, I thought that their ability to score, as Richie had said there, the next thing, they have 3 points reeled off in under 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they can score, you know, the ball is lighter now, you can score from midfield. The use of the ball is really smart. And then the teams are going more for points.
I think over the course of the two semi-finals,
they've been honed since they were so young.
Clare Galway drawn game and the Limerick Cork game, I think it was like you're averaging a score every 75, every 80 seconds. It's incredible. Yeah. And there's a scoring chance nearly below every 60 seconds, given when you throw the wides in and balls have been dropped short into the hands of the goalkeeper. 5-3-1-0-6 is our text number. If you want to get in touch for 30 cents, you can tweet us at Off the Ball. Somebody on 5-3-1-0-6 asking, Stephen, did you enjoy your pre-final chat with Mary McAleese?
I did. Who said that in?
It's anonymous.
Yeah, well, look, people talk about that, but like, I remember looking around the dressing room and I could see there was some nerves, you know, and that's natural, but I definitely think some people were affected by the whole occasion. But like, for some reason, I don't know where it came out of, but I was very relaxed. I had a bit of nerves, all right, but I found a kind of serenity or a bit of calm. And I was just trying to stay relaxed when I said that. Like, you know, just, you know, it wasn't that I was being disrespectful or like losing focus or anything. I was terribly focused, you know, very well focused. But that was just one of those things, you know.
Yeah, well, look, whatever it takes to try and relax you before going into a game.
Exactly, you can't be all wound up. Like, something's got to give. There has to be a release, and that, I guess, was just that little bit of release.
We've talked about the 07 final and recent finals, maybe, that Richie's been involved in, Anthony, and it is also sanitised now when it comes to the media side of things. I mean, John Cody was bang on top of the press day that the Limerick hurlers were going through. Unfortunately for me, attended many Kilkenny All-Ireland final media nights. My God, you lads are boring.
You're asking the wrong lad now, because I've never been at them.
You always managed to avoid them. Look at guys like Tommy Walsh now, who's one of the stars here on Off the Ball. Eddie Brennan, Henry Shefflin, Jackie Tyrrell, they can't get enough out of themselves now. But back in the day, Brian Cody really had them well drilled. What was it like in the build up to, say, your first in 85 and then through to 86, 7 and 88? Like, is it guys just, would a journalist just rock up to your doorstep?
They used to, actually, you're correct. They would try and get a message somehow, and it wasn't obviously the mobile phones. Yeah. And you know, they could meet you in the local town or rock up to the house. And there was a lot more of that time. But now the volume has gone through the roof. There's every sort of show and huge different outlets now. I mean, that wasn't there in the 80s. But there would be a media night, yeah, for sure. But everybody would be trying to avoid. The media would, they'd all come together. Maybe where we used to eat afterwards, and they'd be
and
there.
They could just walk up to any player,
and they could go up to anyone. But everyone was there. But everyone was trying to avoid them because, you know, it wasn't as structured as it is now. In recent years, there's a designated media day. They're tough. Like the media days are, like, it's hard work for 2 or 3 hours. You know, it's fine for a while. But then, you know, halfway through, someone will throw a wobbly question, and you just might say something, you know, pretty quickly.
There is
a
fear that something might be said that will,
nobody
as the cliche
wants,
goes, end up on the dressing room wall.
Or something that might just create a distraction, create an issue that wasn't even known about.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful.
And the next thing, that's the headline news for the week, because someone said, oh, the other crew were playing, or a shower of whatever, and off it flies, you know. Yeah. So that gets legs now.
And it's hugely dangerous in a sense. It cannot possibly do any good for the team. So the only thing that can happen really is it'll do something bad. And like, with all due respect to the media and whoever and radio stations, TV, it's not about them. So, and that's the way we would always look at it. It's not about them. So we shouldn't have to suit them. And you know, it often annoys me sometimes, even with. Some of the media, they expect, oh, we can't talk to this player, we can't talk to that player. And, you know, we should be making it easy on them, whereas they're not making our job any easier with some of the stuff that they print. Print media especially, I think, because, you know, I think TV and radio people are happier because it's their own voice and they're speaking away, so nothing can be taken really out of context. Mm. But it's an added distraction. You're trying to silence a lot of that stuff. But I think even there's been a huge difference since I came in even. At the start, when I came in, there was no media bans as such or no whatever, because people didn't really pay any attention to it as much. Whereas now, it's so flooded with so many, obviously with social media. It's so flooded now that everybody needs something different because you can't regurgitate the same news. And, you know, I often, like, if you, obviously the media days, you'll have one player and you'll have, you know, 20 people around with their dictaphones or their phones or whatever trying to record it. And, you know, they're all getting the same information and they all have to do something different with that information or else nobody's going to use it. So, you know, it's kind of, we just try our best to stay away from it. I'm at the stage now where it doesn't even bother me because, but younger lads, it can affect them because at the start, you kind of embrace it a bit and then you're told, you know, to watch yourself a bit and then you get a bit paranoid about it. And then, you know, as you get even a bit older, then you just decide, well, sure, look, who really cares? You know,
yeah.
2 or 3 days, there's something else.
Yeah, it can affect younger players and you get to know who it affects. But I mean, it's highly competitive now. They all want a different slant. And I mean, I did get feedback from the media. One year I'd say probably 15. Okay, we probably had to bring the captain, but I think we brought 2 or 3 guys who weren't playing, or maybe 1 or 2 guys who were out injured.
That's what John Kiley did.
That's exactly John.
There was some snide remarks so back. Like, he brought lads that aren't even playing, you know. So, you know.
Yeah,
but I think that's where John Kiley and the lads are learning from past experience. They've learned a lot from our experiences in 2007. There was no open night. For supporters, I remember our open night in the Gaelic grounds. The training session was I wouldn't even call it a training session. We literally were just pucking a few balls, did a warm up, pucked a few balls over and back, took some shots, and then went in. We were under the stand in the Gaelic grounds, I'd say, until nearly 11 o'clock that night.
Signing autographs.
I'm not joking, there was over 10,000 people there that night, and we were lined up and we were just signing everything and just chatting. Now, and that's that was good for the supporters, but I remember being exhausted after that night. And
how close to the game was that?
A week to 10 days is the usual thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'd say it wasn't the week of the match for sure, but it was early in the week before that. So I'd say it was week 2. There's a 3 week between the semi-final and the final, so I'd say it was week 2. Start of week 2.
Because we all remember the one, Richie, where Henry came out, supposedly, with the torn cruciate.
Mm. It becomes a circus then.
There must have been 10,000 in Nolan Park that night.
Yeah, there was, and we haven't opened one since. So it just kind of goes to show it's okay for a while. And I think, like, I used to love that. All of our training sessions were open. All of them were open. We never named a dummy team. We did nothing. We played games and trained. The manager of the Tipperary team could walk into Nolan Park and watch our training sessions if they wanted. Now that's you're kind of thinking, Jesus, that's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the way we had it and we liked it like that. And it was kind of a sense of, well, here we are, we're training, this is our team, this is what we're doing, come out and try and beat us. And I think that was great for us and it worked well for us. I think what you kind of had then, like that night, like how can you be prepared for 11,000 people coming into training sessions? Like, where are you going to get the stewards? You know, things like that. And
you'd get fewer at a league game.
Yeah. Well, we certainly would. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, 11,000 a league game is a pretty good league game. But I think that year, I can't even remember what year. What
was it? 2014?
Sorry, no, sure, it was 2010. It was 5 in a row, sure.
It became a circus.
Al Tennyson had the two
of them tore the cruciates and came back. And look, sure, they weren't even close to being right, but. You know, it's the kind of thing that
it snowballed though that time
things
got out of control there, I'd say. Cody was not enamoured with the whole thing with the circus surrounding it. Not in Kilkenny, but the whole country was on about 5 in a row this and 5 in a row that, like, you know.
And that's where the learnings, I guess, have to be taken into account. Like, if you can remember 2012, like, I was part of that journalistic cohort that couldn't believe you were sending players out to us that we knew weren't playing.
Well, you're going to get it now. Prepare for the onslaught.
Do you get days like that in rugby or in soccer the others?
We get it in rugby as well. Absolutely, we do in the build-up to a big Six Nations game. You get a guy who you know might barely make the match day 23.
So GAA would learn from the professional sports as well.
But as you said, Richie, it's not about the media and the listeners are going, well, boo-hoo. Like, who gives rats as to what McIntyre
and the media looking for a characters that will just open up and say all sorts. Is that what they're
I think even nowadays media realise that's not going to happen, that these players, like all of these hurlers and footballers, are very educated. They're intelligent guys. They don't throw out the really young guys anymore. As you said, it'll be the guys who are more experienced. You know, the Jackie Tyrrells, JJ Delaney's of this world, Tommy Walsh, they know exactly what to say and how to say it. But What changes did you make from 2012 to 2015? I know you had two goes at it in 2012, but in terms of mistakes that you feel you made, Anthony, in the build-up to the 2012 final, can you recall any tweaks that you made to the preparation that you wanted to ensure this will not happen again if we get back to that stage?
I suppose at the coaching level or at the games level is probably to put more emphasis on rest when you are rehabbing and, you know, nights off and getting, you know, maybe concentrate, maybe, as you talked about, an in-house game there that, you know, it's going to be next Sunday. So, you know, the training on the Friday night wasn't probably as hard as maybe we did in 2012, because these guys are finely tuned athletes as well, and you want them, whenever you are, you're really going at a really hard match in training, you want
high intensity.
I'd probably shortened the length of time the matches as well, maybe over the years. You know, because you did want to keep them, you know, that it was highly intensive, but also, you know, great tackling, great scoring, but you didn't want to, you know, run for an hour and a half or an hour even. You would shorten the second half in particular. If they were going very, very well, you'd say, yeah, that's great.
It's almost like a good horse trainer, you know, when to push him and when to pull him back.
Yeah, so rest is huge and recovery is huge. And a lot more emphasis on that, I would say, in latter years.
What was it like then, say, when you came onto the Galway panel in the mid-80s, Cyril Farrell had just come back in for his second go at it. So he would have learned an awful lot from the finals he contested as a manager in 1980 and 81. How different an experience was it, say, going from 85 to 88 when you guys were grizzled veterans in preparing for All-Ireland finals at that stage?
Yeah, I suppose 80, a bit like we were very young then at 85, like I was 20, so getting in there that early, you did learn though over the years that you learned off the older guys there to be smarter and, you know, don't meet as much in the public as, you know, as you get closer to the matches. But there was more that side that you learned how to, I suppose, behave or, you know, how to present yourself or, you know, just you stay out of the limelight really. You definitely don't rack into the local town on the Saturday night the weekend before the match, you know. So you would, it's gone to another level now, but definitely on those years you would. But I mean, some things happened. Like we used to go up early years, we'd go up on the Saturday to Dublin. So we'd rack in maybe around this time now into Dublin. There was no motorway that time. Like tomorrow, they'll go to Johnstown House and it's only an hour's drive. They'll relax there for 2 or 3 hours and then it's only 40 minutes of a cavalcade into Croke Park. So there's no going up the night before. But that became a circus in the mid-80s there for Galway. We might go to the Aisling Hotel and it would be mayhem there. Like, there'd be
some mob
sing-song going on in the bar.
And are their pints been drunk like?
Well, the players wouldn't be out there, but you wouldn't move in the hotel. There'd be such a crowd. And there'd be an odd lad. We used to, you know, there'd be guys who would come out of the woodwork that'd always be there for that weekend. And there was a couple of Clare fellas that used to turn up and they'd come in and eat the meal with the players, like we used to know them. It was, yeah.
So there's no screening been done at all here. Like anyone can just stroll in.
So over the years we used to leave the hotel then and go down to, you know, maybe a mile away down the back streets from the Aisling Hotel in some dingy, the quietest pub you could find, and maybe, you know, 20 of us could rock in there and, you know, have an orange and just stay away from the mayhem. But it was, the hotels became, you know, guys are up for the weekend. An awful lot more travelled up on the Saturday night then than they do now. And everyone wanted to go to where the team was. And so there was it was free-for-all, really.
And, yeah, sounds bizarre. And,
Con Hoolan, the famous writer, he arrived one day and was having the meal with us. He was on the tear, I think. I'll never forget it. He was close enough to me. He was having brandy and milk with his dinner.
and he was a very intimate guy, but we
looked up to him because he's such a brilliant writer. So I said, of course you can come in and sit down there. And but you know, that's the type of stuff that was going on. But Cyril was good and well organized, but it wouldn't be, you know the distance now players are from any you know, now their gear is brought up. Richie talked about getting suits and all the stuff. I mean, that's brought up and brought to the hotel where Galway are staying, and it'll be in their rooms on Sunday evening and your key will be handed to you probably after the match.
Yeah.
So that's the level that has gone to now.
I think there's no harm if that. I remember talking to somebody, I think it was Donegal Callan I was talking to recently, about how with Munster, that they kind of missed that in their later years, that, you know, they used to have a few people who just randomly come on the bus with them, and like it kind of connects you to the people that you're playing for a little bit better. And we would always have been like that. Not so much now, but previously when our dress, when our pitches were open, our pitch sessions were open, and you know our dressing rooms were open. Lads can walk in and have a chat randomly. Now lads wouldn't really do it, but you'd often get loads of guys coming in, and you know you'd get the odd kid who was sick during the week and that sort of stuff. And I think that that humbles people a little bit as well, and it makes you think that, or makes you realise that actually, do you know what? You're nothing special, and in 5 years' time, you're going to be walking around the town with your own young lad and looking for people to sign your autographs and stuff as well. So I think that can have a really good effect without being
absolutely
the way it was in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean it's some treat to go, as you said, now with your kids, or and you go and see, you know, your county player who's up there really. Yeah. He's your elite person in the county for the sport. I feel sorry for the kids in ways that they can't go and witness that. Mm. But they do have open evenings, and you know,
I remember the day your final, standing in the Kilkenny dressing room afterwards, chatting to Henry Shefflin, who had the Lee McCarthy on the bench beside him, standing there with a towel around his waist, having torn his cruciate. He tore it for the first time in that game, didn't he, in 2007. Yeah. I'm sure no one gets next or near the dressing rooms nowadays. Mm. Lads, the 3/4 of an hour have ripped past. I wish we could sit here for another little while and chat about it. What about tomorrow's game, Anthony? You obviously know so many of these Galway players really well. I mean, who's going to win tomorrow and why, in your opinion?
Well, I'm hoping Galway. I just think the experience, that they're more experienced than Limerick. And I think if it's very close with 5 to 10 minutes to go, that bit of experience will, Galway will find a way to win it. I think it will be that close though. I think it will be really, really tight. That's just final Galway at 32 scoring chances, score 26 points. They'd only 6 wides, and that was some return. Then they'll probably have to be as good as that tomorrow to beat Limerick, who are really the common team. The only thing with Limerick is it's so hard to get to a final now, with such an effort as you've seen in this year's championship, and that's the way it's going to be for the next number of years. Even harder to get there. Yeah. You want to win it when you get there, and there's no guarantee Limerick or Galway will be back there next year. So this adage of "what should we've always next year" is gone out the window.
You have to seize the day.
I just think, as I said earlier, I think their ability to score at will and very, very fast has definitely gone up for Galway. I would be worried though about the Limerick forwards, and I think we need big games from 2 or 3 defenders there who aren't, you know, need to step up to the mark and help the likes of Pádraig Mannion, Adrian Toohey and Dathi Bourke. I think they're our top 3 defenders, and we're hoping for big games tomorrow from our defence, because there's some speed in the Limerick attack, and you know, that's the way. And I think, you know, I'd say probably experience wise we hold the edge, but hurling wise you have to be very, yes, by very, very narrow.
Okay, obviously points. You're going for Limerick, Stephen. Yep. Not surprisingly, John Cotty has opted against making any changes, so he has that firepower in reserve. The bench has been crucial.
Yeah. I don't think there's any changes needed to be made. I think the way it's working is good. The subs are coming on and they're making a difference in every match, none more so than the last. They made an incredible difference. Shane Dowling is absolutely chomping at the bit, and to be fair to him, he hasn't been moaning or whinging about it. He's kept the head down and worked really hard, taking his chances when he had. You know, it was a tough game day against Clare, but everybody was flat that day. I think a few things for tomorrow. I think Johnny Glynn and Joe Canning are key men for Galway. I think Joe Canning is their absolute star. He's their leader. If he's not in the game and if he's kept quiet, then the rest of the Galway lads would suffer. Not as much as it used to years ago. Mm-hmm. They're not dependent on him like that. But it's just, he does provide that leadership. And if he's not in the game, that's a major plus for Limerick. Will they get Declan Hannan to man mark him? I don't think Declan Hannan is that type of player. He's not a stopper as such like that. Will they sacrifice one of their midfielders to come back around? I don't know. Johnny Glynn is the second one. I don't know, have our 3 fullbacks got the strength for Johnny? But then again, is there any fullback that has the strength for him? Because he's massive and his span is huge. Like, and the way he brought down that ball with one hand on the hurley and finished it with one hand the last day was class. I don't know, would anybody have stopped it? So do you drop Declan back to protect the fullback line there, but then you're leaving Joe and Mark? That's a decision the management have to make there.
So you're going for Limerick, obviously.
Yeah, but for our forward for line is important. I think we need to get some, we can do damage there, I feel. Maybe move Dathi Bourke away from the edge of the square, but the rest of the forwards need to move the Galway defence around. Kilkenny couldn't get any ball in the first half of the second of the replay, and there was ball after ball being won by the Galway half-back line. So I think Limerick can't let that happen. So
okay,
that's my assumption.
So it's no surprise, Richie, you're going to be in a position at the end of this with the casting vote.
Yeah.
What way is it going to go?
I honestly don't know. Obviously, Galway have the experience. That's pretty obvious, but they have gone a lot of games unbeaten now, and they've been playing it pretty close as well, you know, between ourselves and the Clare game, even both Clare games, of course. I think Johnny Glynn is obviously the main man for Galway, because if he's not at the edge of the square, when he's at the edge of the square, it means the halfbacks and midfielders, they can just turn and just drive the ball as far as they can, knowing that he'll be underneath it. And I think Conor Whelan has been incredible. He's so strong in the air. He's so strong on the ground. He's definitely one of the top forwards in the country. And then, of course, Padraig Mannion, I think, has been operating on a different level, I think, to anybody else in the country. But then the thing is, you're looking at those three players who've been incredible. I think there's probably more in Joe. I think he's been probably carrying a bit of injuries, and he has been getting a couple of vital scores on that. But I think there's probably more in him and a bigger game in him. And I just don't know about Limerick. I think Limerick are playing with such a fantastic sort of drive, and it's the whole team. There's nobody really standing out, and that's fantastic to go through to the final. I just think Galway have a little bit more options. Like, I don't think Limerick have that option to just fire the ball in. I think they play a really good game, and if that breaks down on them and they have to go look for something else, that could be trouble. Whereas Galway can just get out there. There's no plan. Get the ball, drive it into the square, pick it up, stick it over the bar, and you know, I think it'll be a great game. I think Limerick probably won't get a better chance, in the sense that yes, they're a young team, but they're on a roll for the last couple of years, whereas if they lose, that roll is going to stop. So I'm going to go for Galway, but only just about, I think.
Okay, yeah, I think everyone's kind of thinking this is right in the balance, and it's going to be tough to pick a side either way. Anthony Cunningham, Stephen Lucy and Richie Oakes, been brilliant having you with us this afternoon. That was our Screwfix.ie panel, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. We'll be back after the news with all things Premier League.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.